Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode here of Beyond the Cover, of course, hosted by John Robb and Jeff Ayers. Jeff, how you doing?
Doing great. It's been a while. Thanks for doing this.
It has been a while. After the we took a little break here for July for Thriller Fest going on, and then PNWA was going on, so some of the events, so we kind of took a little bit of time off in the summer. Now we're back. We're going to be back until the end of the year. Fantastic guest to kind of come back to with Blake Crouch. Of course, Blake has sold over millions, you know, million books. Probably best known right now, I guess, for his series that is the Wayward Pines TV series on Fox, which we just found out just finished season two.
Yeah.
And so Blake is on now to talk about his latest book, Dark Matter. So before we're going to bring him on, I want to remind everybody also that all of the shows here are brought to you by Kensington Books, so make sure you visit kensingtonbooks.com for more information on their authors, including Kevin O'Brien, Lisa Jackson, and many more. So let's get it right now to our guest. Again, his latest book is called Dark Matter. You can go to BlakeCrouch.com for more information on all of the stuff that he has going on. So, Blake, thanks so much for joining us again. It's nice to talk to you again. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for doing this.
So let's just jump right in here to your latest book, Dark Matter. It's out now. It's getting some fabulous reviews. Why don't you go ahead and give everybody the skinny on what you got going on?
Yeah, for sure. So Dark Matter is my first book in 2 years. It's the first thing I've written after the Wayward Pines series. And it's very much in that whole speculative thriller arena that Wayward Pines lived in. Except this time it's about a guy named Jason Dessen, who is this physicist. He's a professor living in Chicago with his wife and his son. And he's got a great life. But like all of us, kind of has those moments of regret and looking back at the road not taken and just wondering if he hadn't made a few different choices, you know, 15, 20 years ago, what would his life look like? And when we catch up with him, he's walking home one night and he is abducted by this masked man at gunpoint. He's given this crazy drug. And when he wakes up, he is in Chicago, but it's no Chicago that he's ever seen. His wife is not his wife. He's never been married, in fact. And he doesn't have a son. And instead of being this middling physics professor, he is a world-renowned physicist who has created something incredible.
This book, it's a great opening, and it's terrific. So our listeners need to pick this book up right away. One of the things that amazed me about this book, Blake, was sort of the genre blending that you did. You've got elements of sci-fi, you've got elements of romance, you've got the thriller elements as well. For someone who's a beginning writer, we're kind of told that you can't blend genres. So I wanted to talk to you about and ask, what's the deal with blending genres?
it's nothing that I necessarily just set out to do, like, oh, I'm going to sprinkle a little of this in and a little of that and see what comes out in the mix. It's just that the stories that I am attracted to don't seem to fall neatly into one box or another. I love the pace of thrillers, but most thrillers tend to bore me because I just feel like it's something I've seen before. I want something extra, and that something extra comes along in the form of a sci-fi underpinning that is grounded in reality. That's maybe not something achievable in the world that we know, but maybe in 5 minutes it will be, or 5 years. The horror, you know, I'm a horror writer at heart. My first two novels were definitely horror thrillers. And there's always that bit of fear and paranoia that I like to keep my protagonists running from. And, I mean, at least with Dark Matter, the romance, that was a surprise to me. I described this book as the first love story I've ever written. And I didn't set out to do that. It just sort of came up as I was writing these characters, and it seemed the right way to go. And hopefully, I mean, the people who know what genre is and who study those kinds of things, yes, this book is a mash of genres, but so is Weird Pine, so is some of my other books. But hopefully most readers don't think of it that way. They just think of it as a compelling story.
That's cool.
Now, Blake, you said that, you know, this is your first book in a couple years, and this is, you know, this is not in the Wayward Pine series. So what was it about Jason, the character, or was it the story alone that you decided that you needed to get this out and kind of sway away from your series and do this standalone?
Well, I was definitely fatigued at the end of writing Wayward Pines, because also the show had been in production at the same time. And I mean, that had been my life for 5 or 6 years. So the idea of doing a standalone novel just felt like a breath of fresh air. Dark Matter was on deck because it deals in this field of science called quantum mechanics, and that's something I've been interested in for years and years, and it's something I always wanted to incorporate into a book. I just didn't have the confidence, because it's a really intimidating field of science. It's incredibly dense and complicated and complex, and I took as few math and science courses as possible in college, so it just took me years to build up enough of a knowledge base to write with some authority about the basic concepts of quantum mechanics. So it was part of getting away from the Weird Pine, my interest in quantum mechanics, and also these three different storylines I'd had bouncing around in my head for a while. And I tried to write each of them in isolation and struck out because they just weren't on their own enough to warrant an entire novel. I saw how they fit together almost like puzzle pieces into one big, more ambitious novel than I'd ever written before. That was Dark Matter, and that's sort of the genesis of how I came to write it.
John's going to ask you about Wayward Pines, this series, and how that got started in a second, but I wanted to follow up with one of the things you said. You said you started off as a horror writer, and I'm curious, mm-hmm. where does horror end and thriller begin?
I think horror has to do with how far you're willing to push your protagonist. And when I say horror, I don't mean it in the sense of monsters and ghosts,
right.
or torture porn or anything like that. I just mean horror in the sense that we, and by we I mean the audience, I try to make them feel as much of what the protagonist is going through as I possibly can. I want them to be right there along with them every step of the way, feeling the heart palpitations and the sweat and the fear and the what's happening and the psychosis. That's what I mean by horror. It's the places that I try to take my heroes.
You know, I have to agree, because I always tell people that there's a difference between horror and gore.
Yes.
Don't confuse the two. I always say, look, my quintessential horror movie, because I was, you know, born in the 70s, was born in 1970, was 1978 when Halloween came out, because it wasn't what you saw, it was what you didn't see that scared the shit out of you. It's when they have all the gore jumping all over the screen that you just kind of laugh about it.
Exactly. I think it's much scarier when it's left to the imagination, as opposed to when it's just everything's thrown at you and you're just wading through blood.
Right. I mean, when you read a thriller book, like a military thriller, and, the reader's probably never going to be involved in those types of situations, but when you write a horror story about just a normal family and something happens to them, that more hits you to the bone, because it's like, can somebody just come through my window and slash my throat or something to that effect? That's the scary part that I always found out from horror. So that's what I always like. And that's when, you know, I first discovered when you wrote the book Run, and I remember we talked about it way back when you got in the magazine. And that's kind of, you know, what I remember when I first got onto you. And then you jumped into, you know, the Wayward Pine series. So I guess for fans, of course, that know the story and they see it on the screen, but they don't know the history behind it, can you give a little history about when you started Wayward Pines and now when it kind of got itself to the big, or to the small screen, I guess you want to say, but in a big way?
Yeah. Are you asking where the idea from for Wayward Pines first came from?
Well, not
from,
really
the
idea,
book?
But when you start, when you kind of started conceptualizing this is what you were going to do, you know, did you, first of all, you never expected it to probably blow up the way that it did, but did you expect it to even be a series?
Oh, no. I mean, I don't think you can ever expect that anything will be a TV show. The truth is, Wayward Pines was originally intended to be a graphic novel. I had this idea for the story that everyone knows with Ethan Burke going to this town, and, you know, he gets in the car wreck and wakes up and nothing makes sense. And I was at a point in my writing career where I just wanted to write a graphic novel for a minute, and I'm not sure why. I think I liked the visual part of it. I wanted to kind of do the challenge of trying to write those kinds of scripts because they're so fascinating if you've ever read a comic script. But I started developing it with this guy at DC named Will Dennis. He was at Vertigo. And we worked on it for a while, but ultimately couldn't get Vertigo to buy it and make it because it was an original material, and you know that's a harder sell, and I really didn't have a name at that point in time. And I was pretty bummed out because I put a lot of work in, and I was like, oh, but the story was still sticking with me. And I decided, well, maybe I should just make this a novel. And so I wrote Pines, and as soon as I finished Pines, and it was on its way to being published by Thomas and Mercer, and this would have been summer of 2012, so 4 years ago, my film agent started sending the manuscript around, and a lot of producers were responding positively to it, and one in particular, a guy named Donald DeLine, hooked me up with this guy named Chad Hodge, and Chad and I hit it off immediately when we got on the phone, and Chad wrote this incredible pilot script for Wayward Pines that was essentially the first half of the book Pines. The script ended where Ethan first encounters the fence and hears noise out beyond it. And it was such a powerful script, and it was weird. The script was done before the book was published. But then the book came out and kind of blew up, and we were able to attach M. Night Shyamalan as director and producer, and we sold it to Fox that fall, and we were in production less than a year after that.
That's absolutely amazing. You also had another show called Good Behavior. Could you talk a bit about that?
Sure. So Good Behavior is an upcoming TV show. It's going to be on TNT. It's a 10-episode mm-hmm. series. It's going to premiere November 15th. And it's based on these three novellas I wrote about a character named Letty Dobesh. And it's very different from Dark Matter and Wayward Pines in that there's no high concept. The concept is this character of Letty. She is the most vivid, amazing character I've ever written. And I just say amazing because I didn't even really have to try to write her. She just literally appeared on the page as I was trying to come up with this scene back in, I don't know, 2009 or something. And so it's about this woman who is just out of prison. She's been in and out of prison her whole life. She is a meth addict and a junkie and a thief. And she's trying to get her life on track. I hope it's not as bad as this character. Because when
oh
we first meet her,
God,
she's ripping off.
It's for a reason.
But when we first meet her, she's ripping off hotel rooms at this luxury resort, and she's caught when the guest unexpectedly returns, and she has to hide in his closet with these slatted windows, and she's staring through these windows as there's a guest and this other guy come into this room, and the guest is hired to murder this guy's wife, and Letty's dilemma is, what do I do now? And that's sort of the entry into her world, and she becomes entangled with this hitman who actually is possibly going to end up saving her life, and she may end up saving his life. It's a really different kind of story than I would normally tell, but I love it as much as I love these other books. And the first story was called The Pain of Others, and it was published in Alfred Hitchcock Mystery Magazine. And I'm going to bundle all these books up for a tie-in edition when the show comes out.
Oh,
and it stars Michelle Dockery. It stars Michelle Dockery, who is just finished playing Lady Mary on Downton Abbey, which is fascinating to see her go from corsets to mess pipes.
It's going to be typecast.
Those look like stereotyping somebody. That's nice. So I want to kind of jump back in here to the latest book, Dark Matter. And again, I want to remind everybody that we're speaking here with author Blake Crouch. The latest book is called Dark Matter. Make sure you go to blakecrouch.com for more information on this book and, of course, all of his works. But I want you to talk a little bit more about secondary characters in Dark Matter, because I'm always thrilled. I mean, I love, you know, the protagonist is the protagonist. And I'm a villain guy. I think the villains are the ones who make the book, but the secondary characters are the ones who give the story the depth. So when you were writing this, what secondary characters do you think stood out to you more than maybe you thought they were going to in this story?
Well, the character of Amanda became very important. Without giving too much away, she shows up in the early pages of the book, and when I was writing it, I didn't think that she was actually going to be a character, but or have more of a presence. But as I got to the midpoint and I set my hero Jason into this insane journey through the multiverse, I realized he needed someone to go along with him, because otherwise it was just going to be a lot of pages of a guy sort of just with no one to talk to. And just as a writer, that's a really hard thing to write. So she became a really important character. So did even more so Daniela, who is Jason's wife. You know, we see different iterations of her throughout the book, and I was really surprised with how fully formed she became by the end. And I felt that, I mean, it's not as much her story as it is Jason's, but in a way it is, because this is about their love.
Now, I understand that you're currently adapting a screenplay for Sony for Dark Matter.
Uh-huh.
Could you talk a bit about writing a screenplay as opposed to writing a novel? The differences, and sort of, since you're familiar with these characters really well, is it really difficult to sort of smush it into a screenplay that's essentially 120 pages?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually 110 pages. It was a lot of smushing.
that's a tech term, sorry.
Yeah, smushing. Those are the notes. Could you smush this a little more?
Yeah, that's a Hollywood term, smush it.
I started writing the script about a month after I finished the final edits on the book, and I'm working with some amazing producers over at Sony who've just given incredible notes throughout the process. But it's a really interesting struggle, because Dark Matter is not the longest book if you really count the words, but a lot happens. And more happens than could ever possibly fit in a two-hour movie. So you're forced to figure out what to pare away, what to lean into. It just makes you be really merciless in terms of your storytelling. Makes you streamline. In a lot of ways, I really love the screenwriting form, because it makes you be incredibly clear about what you're saying. It makes all of your dialogue exchanges that you have to be so much more on point. I find that when I am writing a scene in the script that I'm pulling out of the book, I'm like, God, this is so talky and wordy in the book. I mean, what was I doing? He's blathering on page after page when in the script, I mean, it has to just flow and you have to really, as you guys say, smush.
Now, back in, you know, in the early career of Blake Crouch, there was a big thing, a lot of self-publishing. A lot of people started trying to do this realm, and they were kind of getting into it, and it was very difficult for the breakout. Can you talk a little bit about, because there's a lot of authors out there who are trying to take, you know, like the same path that you did, and maybe like a Boyd Morrison, and, you know, even Vince Flynn self-published his first book, and kind of explain a little bit about, you know, how you kind of did that self-publishing, and why do you think it's so important, because you're a big ebook guy too, how this generation is actually, I think, a good thing instead of a bad thing, even if print sales are down. But I think more people are actually reading because ebooks are more accessible.
Yeah. I started self-publishing because after publishing four books with St. Martin's Press, I was just really demoralized by what I perceived as a real lack of control and you know, sales just not exploding the way that I thought they should. And, you know, to be fair, I don't think I was writing as good of books then as I am now. I'll totally share some of that blame. But I was just kind of at the right moment, and I had the right content because I had some of my early work back under my control. And I caught the wave of self-publishing just as it was becoming a wave. And, you know, me, my friend Joe Conrath, and others just started putting things out just to see what would happen. And there just wasn't all that much competition back when I was starting this in 2009. You know, you had a handful of people who had these meteoric rises and get a lot of attention, but those were kind of few and far between. You could put a book out and really get some attention. This was before exclusivity and all that stuff came up on Amazon. And it was just a really fascinating time. It was almost like this little beautiful bubble of goodness where if you had good content and you had good packaging and you were just a little bit smart in how you packaged it and how you talked about it and using a little bit of social media, you could get sales and you could, it was sticky. And you could stay and hang around on bestseller lists for a while. And then I put out my novel Run, which was the first frontlist thing I had ever self-published. And that really took off and did very well. And I still self-publish. Well, I still have my backlist under my control, and it's, you know, technically self-published today. But
that's,
I think,
awesome,
it's a much,
right there.
Yeah.
That's awesome,
yeah,
that you still have your backlist.
Yeah, I still have everything pre-Wayward Pines is under my control, and I love having that just to play with and just to see how things still work. And I think it's a lot harder now than it was. I know everyone says that, you know, things inevitably just get more challenging, but it really is tough now. It would be a brutal environment to try to break out a new novel as a self-published thing, I think. And not that people shouldn't do it. I mean, it's an amazing option that's available to them. But it's just so much more competitive, and it's this just stacked against self-published writers now in a way that it wasn't when I was there. So I'm just very lucky that I happened to be there as the wave was just starting to rise, and I was there as it crested, and I just surfed it all into shore, and now the waves are way more erratic, and I think it just is churning people out. But I love still having my own books under my control. I love doing that. I like working with Amazon Publishing on my Wayward Pine series and Abandon, and having Random House doing Dark Matter. It feels like a good thing to be diversified in the way that I'm publishing, because I think if you stick too closely to just one thing, you know, you could just get left behind in a minute.
Well, that sort of leads me to my question, actually. As a writer, do you prefer writing in a series or do you prefer writing standalones?
I want to be writing a standalone because I'm still in PTSD mode after, you know, 5 or 6 years.
What a nice way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, it was all engrossing. And so the idea of a fresh start just was amazing with Dark Matter, and I'm sure whatever I do next will be a standalone. But I get why people get locked into doing series because, you know, with the series, you kind of have your main character, and you got it all figured out. And yes, you have to come up with some new stuff, but it's not just a blank chalkboard like it is when you try to start up a new standalone. When I'm writing a standalone, I wish I was writing a series and vice versa.
We always have this debate because I'm a standalone guy. I'm not a big series guy unless I know the series has an ending, like, you know, Lord of the Rings or something like a Harry Potter, you know, something that I know it's going to have an ending because that builds me to the suspense. I'm not a big fan of series that are just open-ended and 27 books later, they're still fighting the most diabolical killer they've ever faced. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
You keep using the same line. So, and I love the fact that what you just said, when you have to stand in front of a blank canvas and say, okay, what do I do, instead of having 50% of the painting already done.
Right. Well, and part of it is also, you know, I think if you are trying to make a living doing the self-publishing thing, you don't have the luxury of just doing a standalone after standalone. Because they take time. I mean, to come up with a good idea, it just takes months. Back in the day when I was full-on self-publishing, the idea of taking 2 years to write a book was horrifying to me because, wow, what happens in 2 years? Everyone forgets about it. You got to keep your name out there. You got to keep throwing yourself at everyone. Hopefully now I've bought myself a little bit of time to slow down and pace myself and really write the books that I want to be writing.
Well, Blake, I got to tell you, man, it has been fascinating being able to have you on and talk to you about just an array of different things. Congratulations with the latest book, Dark Matter. I mean, it's a fascinating book. It's another hit. And we want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been great to talk with you again.
Thank you so much for having me on. This was fun.
No,
looking forward to the new show as well in November.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and if you ever got any news to let us know, give it to us, and, you know, we can kind of let people know and update them, too. So stay in touch. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. You have a good one. Enjoy.
Hey, good night.
Thanks.
Good night. Take care.
So, again, everybody, that is author Blake Crouch with the latest book, Dark Matter. It's out now. You can get it however format you want it in. It's available right now. You can go to Amazon and pick it up again, whatever format you want. Go to BlakeCrouch.com for more information on all of Blake's stuff, all of his books, all of his information. It's all right there. If you want to follow him on Facebook, Twitter, you can do all of that. We are going to be right back after this break with our second half of the show. So until then, listen to this. welcome back, everybody, after the break. Again, we want to thank Blake for joining us tonight. That was a special treat. First time we had him on our show here, Jeff.
Oh, yeah, it was great. And like I said, the book is wonderful, so everybody should read it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big TV, you know, network guy. I've actually not seen the show Wayward Pines. I know about the books, and I've read the books, but I've not seen the show, so I don't know. M. Night Shyamalan kind of turned me off a little bit after The Village. But I hear that things are fascinating and that the show is really, really good. I'm just really not a network kind of TV kind of guy. I mean, my favorite shows are Columbo and Murder, She Wrote, and I'll watch them every day and, you know, twice on Sunday if I could, so.
Well, I'm the Star Trek guy, but yeah. I'll admit the same thing. I have not watched Wayward Pines either, but because of M. Night Shyamalan, whatever his name is. But I'm looking forward to
yeah.
the new one that he was talking about in November. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, yeah, that would be good. Yeah, so maybe we'll check that out. So you get some books for us to talk about.
Well, you always know I'm reading, so.
Always.
If I'm not reading, I'm in the coffin. So anyway.
Yelling at me. No. If you're not reading, you're at the library, and that's a whole different show. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. We're here all week.
Yeah.
I have to say, so this is coming out in October, I believe. Yes, John Land's new book. It's another Caitlin Strong Cold Dead. This time, it's ISIS. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Well, I know that he's been retweeting our reviews on Twitter a lot because we, you know, we said it was a fascinating read. I mean, really, John's got that, you know, he's kind of found his niche, I think, with Caitlin Strong, and he definitely seems to be in a great groove right now. The last couple Caitlin Strong books have just been outstanding, so he's almost getting to the point where it's going to be hard to outdo himself from the last book.
It's true, but he's got that groove going, and it's amazing. I don't know how he does it, but I'm thrilled. And he's certainly, you know, he's been writing for a long time, but I think Caitlin's his best character. And it shows.
Oh, I think so, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Another one I wanted to mention is Michael Korcha. I think that's how it's pronounced. It's Koryta. And his new book is called Rise the Dark. And it actually comes out next week. And it is a really wonderful thriller about a man who is a private eye, and his wife was murdered by a man named Garland Webb, and he knows Garland Webb is guilty, and Garland Webb gets out of jail on a technicality and flaunts his guilt, you know, like, I killed your wife, to this guy named Mark. And it's about Mark trying to use justice to get this guy behind bars again. And while all that's going on, there is a story set in Montana where a guy is one of those folks who works for the power company, and his wife is kidnapped. And how the two mesh together is actually quite surprising. And the suspense is very, very good. So
really?
If you've never read him before, I highly recommend this book.
Huh. Very interesting.
Yeah. And it actually is a follow-up to
his
previous
stuff
book.
Before. I've seen his stuff before, but I've not read it myself. So this might have to be one to go pick up.
I recommend it. I really do. His last book was really good, too. It was called Last Words. And, yeah, read him. He's good.
Well, I got an email today, and I don't know if you've gotten the book, and I'm actually checking right now to see if we have it in our inventory, but David Morrell emailed me about the final Thomas DeQuincy book, and he wanted to make sure that we had gotten it, called Ruler of the Night, so I'm pretty excited to see that one.
I got it.
You know, because it was,
I got
was
it.
One of the guys who said, I don't like to write a series, and he ended up writing a series. But
yeah,
this is
course.
The last book. He said, and he said in his email, he goes, And we're going to get David on. I don't know if we're going to get him on this show or I'm going to get him on the other one because he lives in Santa Fe, so I don't know if he is going to be able to make it because of the time, but we'll see. And he said, this is my goodbye to 1855 London. And I was like, oh, David, that's kind of sad. But, yeah.
It's true.
The first two books
in that series were just phenomenal. It's like going in the time machine back in time. You feel like you're there.
Yeah, and I just...
And having just been to London recently, I actually saw some spots that he was talking about. And I went, oh! So it's kind of cool.
The other thing is, of course, you know, we were gone because Thriller Fest was going on, and then PNWA in Seattle was going on, so there was a lot of stuff that was happening. Now, we didn't go to Thriller Fest this year, but, of course, you went to Thriller Fest. How was the conference? I heard it was fascinating.
It actually was one of the best conferences they've ever had.
Is that because I wasn't there?
I don't know if it was because the people there or just... It's hard to describe. You gotta go to understand. Everybody was just super nice this year. There was nothing really like scary that happened because sometimes that happens at conferences.
It has, yeah, it's happened.
Yeah, and we're not talking about the food, but it's another story. This was definitely one of the best ones they've had.
Now,
I'm already excited about next
year. Now, there were some authors that were missing from this last one, but were there some newbies that, you know, some bigger names that were there? I wasn't sure who, because since we weren't going, I really didn't keep up with who all was going. But were there some names that you hadn't really seen or ones that that came back that haven't been there for a while?
Well, John LaSqua was back, and he was actually receiving an award, so that was pretty neat. An author we interviewed on our show, Matthew Beatley, is that right? The special ops guy was there.
Oh, okay.
And he was fascinating. And actually, it was kind of neat getting to actually meet a lot of the authors we talked to on this show. So
and did they actually say that they'll come back on, or did they, you know, call a dentist and say you guys hurt me?
Well. No, it was more like removing the restraining orders.
Oh, good. Okay, so we got those done.
Yes,
I
didn't
want to say that's why I couldn't go, but I don't think...
Yeah, exactly.
We flirted around the idea of VoucherCon. We'll have to see if we make it there or not, but, I mean, we flirted that idea around of trying to make it. So I don't know. We haven't been to any conferences this year, besides just the local ones around here, but, yeah, we haven't gone to anything major. We wanted to go to PNWA, and then something happened, couldn't make it to that, and then...
We missed you at that one as well.
I know, I'm sorry. But I was actually doing work because, you know, we got some big guests that are coming up on this show. I got Karen Slaughter coming on the show. We just booked her.
Yes.
She's going to be here on our show.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got Kevin O'Brien, I know we got coming on the show.
That's right,
Who else
and
we
have... We've got some great people coming up in the next couple months. It's going to be wonderful. I think our listeners will be very happy.
Who else we got coming out? I forget who else we got coming. But, we got some good authors coming on the show. I mean, that's going to be some exciting time. It's exciting time right now for books in general. I mean, I see a lot of good ones out there. I got to get back into it's tough to kind of, you know, you're working all day, and then I'm trying to read or write at night and do some different things and try to get everything done. So, I mean, it's tough, and I know that you have the same thing. I mean, when this is, you know, not really your full-time gig and you have other things that you have to do, it takes away from the time, and I just wish that we were able to do more of it. So that's okay.
It's true. And you're absolutely right. This year especially, I'm looking at my review pile of books that are coming out in the next couple of months, and I'm just drooling, like, holy cow, there's some fantastic stuff here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
yeah,
it's been a great year so far as well for wonderful books.
Yeah. The one thing that it's been kind of sad, though, has been the movies. I mean, what the fuck is going on in Hollywood? I mean, some of the things that they're rehashing is just terrible, and I don't understand. Okay, I mean, you know, we can have a show alone on DC versus Marvel, and I'm a DC guy. You know, I grew up Super Friends, Batman, Superman, but I was always under the thing of you'll never ever be able to do a good Superman movie, because the problem with me with Superman is that he's too indestructible, which means you have to make a villain so much more indestructible. It's like saying something's perfect and then trying to make it super perfect, and it's impossible to do. But why is DC so bad at making these freaking movies and Marvel so good? I don't understand it.
I did not see Suicide Squad, but my son did.
I didn't either, but I want to go see it. But I heard the reviews, and it's like it got shitty reviews.
My son was really excited to see this movie, and he saw it last night, and when he got home, he looked at me and he goes, "That was the worst movie I've ever seen in my entire life."
Did he give any specifics?
Yeah, he said all the characters, with the exception of one, were just given the short stick, really. He didn't really like anybody. The whole scenario was phony, and even the Joker was not that great of a character.
So,
and
my question is,
yeah,
then I was wondering if they built this movie up, because all I saw in the trailer was Harley Quinn. So did they build this up to spin her off on her own?
I assumed, and from what I've heard, she's great in it, and that's cool, but she's the only thing that's good about it, from what I've been told, by more than my son.
And I love the comics. I mean, I read the comics, and I've read both series, and I have a lot of them in my digital comics that I read, and I think that they're great. And the one thing that I always found fascinating was this is just something that's small, but it's something that's also big because it's a detail-oriented, is why did they change what Harley looked like?
The wrong person.
I know. It's kind of like, you know, why did you change what the character looks like? I mean, even when the actress comes out and says she feels uncomfortable wearing the clothes they had her wear, why did you just take her out of that? Why wasn't the source material good enough to just take it and put it on the screen? Why do they have to change it? Why do they have to make the Joker literally look like Max Headroom on steroids? You know, I mean, why did they have to do it that way? So that's what I don't understand, and I think that's the problem with DC, is that Marvel takes their source material and that's what they use. DC takes their source material and they treat it like Lenny in A Tale from Two Cities, or wasn't it? What's the book, the Dickens book, where he's like, and I love it, and pet it, and kiss it, and hug it, and then he just tears it to shreds. And it's like, that's what they do with it.
I don't think they like the characters. That's my philosophy on it. But
I don't know. I don't know if they just, if DC doesn't have enough control, or they don't have enough control over when they sell the rights, that these people are just able to do whatever they want to do. Because a lot of people don't know, and they'll get mad at the author. You know, it's like they get mad at Lee Child, like, oh, my God, how could Jack Reacher be Tom Cruise? He's not Tom Cruise. And then they get mad. It Lee's like, what do you think? I have control over who I pick for Jack Reacher? Give me a break. I stole the rights. They do their thing. So,
have you seen the trailer for Justice League?
No.
Don't.
Why do they do this to me? Oh, wait a second. I did see it, but the one that I saw had more Aquaman in it than anything. It was like a big Aquaman thing. Okay, I did see it. And that's the other thing. I thought that, you know, how they did Aquaman, I think that he's good, but again, Aquaman to me, he's orange and he's green and he lives in the sea and he does his thing, and what's wrong with that? You know,
I had a SpongeBob thought for a second.
he could have a friend called Patrick, but what's wrong with that? You know, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, they turned – when they did the – you know, Tim Burton did two decent Batman movies. you know, Jack Nicholson was a fabulous Joker before Heath Ledger said, no, this is how the Joker really is. And then, but then the last two they did with the, was it the Bruckheimers or the Shoemaker? I forget, whichever one took it.
Joel Schumacher,
they literally,
yeah.
Schumacher. They literally just ripped it to shreds. And that's the thing I'm trying to understand is why aren't they taking these things more serious? And it's like people are going to the movies because they go to the movies regardless. But the people are, you know, are getting cheated out of this thing. I mean, I was more excited legitimately. I should have been more excited to see Batman versus Superman and more excited to see Marvel Civil War and more excited to see Suicide Squad than I was to see Secret Life of Pets. But Secret Life of Pets was the one I was more excited to see over all those other ones. And I kind of felt bad that it was. But it was, you know. I mean, I saw The Conjuring 2. I thought that was a great movie for what it was. I mean, you know what you're getting when you get into it. And it was exactly what you thought it was going to be. And I thought it was great. I loved it. I thought The Conjuring 2 was an outstanding movie. And I wish I would have seen Lights Out, and I haven't seen that yet. I want to see that.
Have you seen Star Trek Beyond yet?
No, I haven't been able to see that because we just moved. So we haven't been able to go to the movies for the last couple, 3 weeks, but I know we're going to get out and see it. Have you seen Star Trek Beyond?
I have.
How many times have you seen Star Trek Beyond?
Oh, just once.
Oh, okay.
But I'll hope to see at least one more time while it's still in theaters. Star Trek Beyond is that it's a terrific episode of the original series with a bigger budget.
Oh,
and
wow.
In terms of, though, the action scenes and in terms of some of the other details about the film, it kind of falls apart, but I loved it just because the characters were nailed perfectly. I love those
characters. Who's the villain in this one?
His name is Krall, and he's kind of looks like a Jem'Hadar from Deep Space Nine era, and he's kind of hard to understand half the time. I'd be curious to know what you think about his motivations when you finally find out why he's doing what he's doing.
Okay.
We'll have a discussion about
it. Okay, that'll be good, yeah, because that's definitely one on the radar I want to go see, and I got to see it on the big screen because you got to see those kind of movies like that, I think.
Yeah, I think people who are not that in love with Star Trek like I am just might think it's okay or maybe not even like it at all. But if you are a major, you know, you've seen all the episodes, you know those characters, you love them, this movie's fantastic.
And so are you excited to see Rogue One?
No.
You know why? Because when you have to go back and re-freaking film half the damn movie, something's going on.
When Twitter is abuzz with the people making the film having to defend themselves, kind of like with Suicide Squad, that's just not a good sign.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping that they surprise us and that they're putting and that they're actually doing what some companies do on Wall Street, like they're, you know, like they're going to underperform but then over, you know, exaggerate, you know, they're going to like under-exaggerate and then overperform, and it's like, ha-ha-ha, yeah, okay. So everybody's coming in like, oh, my God, this movie's not going to be very good. And then they see it, and they're like, it wasn't half freaking bad, actually. You know what I mean? Because you're thinking it's going to be so bad that it is, that when you come out, you'll be like, hey, maybe this wasn't so freaking bad. I don't know. So I don't know.
That was my thought on Beyond, because the trailers for that film were god-awful, and the buzz was god-awful, and they went and did reshoots, so I was pleasantly surprised by what I saw.
So, yeah, and I'm hoping that they do, you know, a good job with the second Star Wars. One thing that I think, my daughters have the book, and right now they haven't really read it yet, but I've been reading the views, and that's the new Harry Potter.
Yes.
Have you jumped into it at all, or what?
I'm about halfway through it right now.
Okay, what do you think?
It's neat to see where she's taken the characters. And I would love to see it performed because it's a screenplay. Well, it's a, you know, an adaptation of the play. It's I wish she'd written a novel with it.
Well, that's the thing.
Instead
okay.
of me just reading the screenplay.
Because the reviews have come back not very good on this. And it's not because it's written as a play. So, if you know, people, again, if you haven't gotten the book or looked at it, this is not a book. This is a screenplay that you are reading. So it's like you're reading that back in high school and you're reading Arthur Miller, The Crucible, or Shakespeare. You're reading this in play form. So know that
yep.
when you go in. This is not a novel. It's a play. So it's like you're reading the play. But the one thing that a lot of people have said, and you know, I asked some questions, because at the end of the movie, at the end of the seventh movie, Albus was going on the train to Hogwarts. There was no mention of any other child who was already at Hogwarts that made you think that he was the oldest son. But he's not the oldest son. He's not the oldest Potter, you know, from Harry. There was another son that's already there, and then he has another daughter, I guess, that is going to the thing. So Albus is like third in the cycle or something.
Well, try not to spoil things. Let's just say that this opens at that scene.
Okay. So, and that was the thing, because there was no mention of any other children, and all of a sudden, I guess there are no other children. But what some of the people were saying was that the characters don't identify themselves the way they did from that physical scene and where they were. Like, you know, you're putting Albus in Slytherin, and his best friend's going to be a Malfoy. Okay, I get it. But some of the things they're saying about Harry and Jeannie and Ron and Hermione, I mean, okay, here's the one thing that I didn't like, and just from knowing, you made Hermione the Minister of Magic. She's probably 35, 36 years old, and all of a sudden she becomes the Minister of Magic when every other Minister of Magic was an old guy. And so it was almost like, what happened in this 19 years for this whole wizarding world to change into what it is? It's like there's a massive chunk missing with no explanation.
For me, the issue is, because it's not a novel, it's just, you know, reading the setting, and then there's who's talking,
bunch of people
the dialogue.
Talking.
Yeah, I really want to get immersed in it, and that's not possible.
Do you think it was
think
a mistake
it,
to do it
a different
this way?
Story.
Do you think it was a mistake to do it this way instead of just saying, hey, you know what, here's a play, and then maybe putting the play on a DVD or making it to where people can watch it instead of putting it into this form? Do you think that this book takes away from the series?
It's a great question. I would say that they would never put it on DVD because they're going to tour it around the country. It's going to go to New York and all those other places, and they're going to make $500, you know, for ticket sales. And partly
right,
because
they've done that before.
Part.
I mean, for people who can't afford to go spend $100 a seat in New York or $150, $200 a seat, you know, they did Phantom of the Opera, and they've done Cats, and they've done Chorus Line, and they've done other Broadway plays and brought them out as kind of a movie so you can still see it and understand the story, you know. So it's been done before. I'm just wondering, like you said, why – I just don't understand why, when you have this, why did you draw it as a Shakespearean play? I just don't get that. I don't get that part at all.
Yeah, I have a feeling that she just wanted to do something different. And
yeah,
the
but
publisher
she didn't write it.
Said,
Jack Thorne wrote it.
You have new Harry Potter material? You know? So
I mean,
if she'd written it on a napkin, they would have published it.
Yeah, but she didn't write this. This was from John Tiffany and Jack Thorne. She just approved the script. She didn't write the script.
Right.
She
That's
didn't
right.
write this play at all. But you know
well,
what? She did come out.
I have a hard time believing
out,
that
goes,
from looking at the book cover.
Well, it says right on there, it says, you know, this is based on an original short story by Horror, but the play is by Jack Thorne, and you know, he's the one who wrote the play. So the thing is she came out and she goes, there's no more Harry, this is it, there's no more after this. Maybe she has the PTSD, like Blake said. I mean, it had to come to an end sooner or later. I'm just wondering, why didn't you just stop it when you stopped it? Because the other thing is, when you had a villain like a Voldemort, how can you go from what was going on through those 7 years of Harry and Voldemort and the give and the take and everything that was going on and all the stuff you found out to having really no villain like that anymore.
I can understand the reasoning for wanting to know what happens to these characters that we love. And that's the whole series thing again, though. At some point, you thought
it was
over.
Why can't they just live their lives and be done? And it's like, it happened. Okay, it all happened. They lived their lives, lived happily ever after. They do that in Disney movies all the time. You kiss the prince, they live happily ever after. Why can't that be enough?
I actually kind of agree with you in this case. Yep.
Oh, on that note, then, we are going to have to stop this short because I don't want to fuck up the where you agree with me. But no, we're actually coming to the end anyway. So, but
that's true. We never agree. Yeah. What the heck?
I know. So we have to end it where we agree, and then we'll have to come down. Well, okay, here we go. I will just say this, that I think that the next Star Wars movie, Rogue One, is going to be better than Star Trek Beyond, just because it's freaking Star Wars. There. Now we're even.
Oh, here we go.
So, all right, man. Hey, so we'll be back in another 2 weeks. Who's the guest in 2 weeks?
Actually, no, we're back next week.
Oh, that's right, because it's my birthday in two weeks, so we're not doing it then.
That's right. So Kevin O'Brien will be joining
Kevin
us next
O'Brien's
week.
Next week. That's right. And then we're going to take, and then we'll be off, and then we'll be back because my birthday is on August 23rd. So if anybody wants to send
me
a happy birthday.
We've got a show on the 24th, actually.
Yeah. So if anyone wants to send me a happy birthday email, you can do that at editor@suspensemagazine.com. I would like a happy birthday email. Or you don't have to. It doesn't make a difference. It's up to you.
send you copies of Suicide Squad on DVD.
Yeah, send me, here you go. Hey, any author who's looking for a publisher, send me a copy of your script. There you go. How about that? That's the birthday present that I'm going to give to you on my birthday.
I like it.
Yeah. So, all right, man. So we'll see you next week, Kevin O'Brien. And we all know Kevin's going to be a hoot, and I read his latest book, and so that's going to be fun to talk about with him.
Oh, yes. I love how he destroys Seattle every book. I love it.
And I'll tell you what, the body count in this latest book is fucking high.
Yes.
I mean, this is a high body count he did on this one. So, yeah. So, all right, everybody. Until next time, like we like to say, keep reading. Take it easy.
Take care. Thanks again.